Hello, and welcome to Michelle the Cast, the audio companion to michelletheblog.com, and I'm your host, Michelle, obviously. Today's episode starts a series on feminism, the feminist movement, and drag performity, specifically looking at feminists within the drag community and how they view their feminism, their drag within a feminist lens, and overall how they see the drag community as a feminist. Today's episode features Courtney Conkers, one half of Drag Coven, the media group who photograph, video, and bring to light the drag community across the globe. So stay tuned and enjoy the sponsored post in between. I'll see you on the other side.
Hello.
Hi, Courtney. How are you?
Oh my goodness, it's working. I was like, oh, what am I doing? I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Awesome. I'm glad that you were able to get it all situated. I was like, I don't know. I should have called like 5 minutes, or I should have texted it like 5 minutes earlier so you could download it and everything. So
Don't worry. Now it's really cool looking, and people always tell us that Drag Coven needs a podcast of like when we're on a long road trip and we have nothing else to do.
Just start talking to each other.
Yeah. And like, we've never done that before. And we're always like, yeah. Like someday there'll be a podcast, like maybe someday. Now I'm looking at this app being like, this seems easy. I can maybe handle this.
Right. So I'm going to start out with, so what's your name and what's your background?
In drag, you mean?
Yes,
in drag. My name's Courtney Conkers, and my background is that I am an AFAB drag artist. I am a cisgendered female drag artist who does female presenting drag. And I'm probably most widely known for being half of the drag media group, the Drag Coven. So we've been doing drag of our own, but also documenting drag all over the world, actually, for the last 4.5 or so years now. And I got into drag in a really roundabout way. I came through it kind of through my love for Lady Gaga and cosplaying and traveling her with my friends and going to all her different tours. And then I did a feminist master's degree that talked all about gender performativity, and that tied in a lot with drag. And we just kept meeting drag queens and drag kings and drag performers through the Gaga shows because, you know, she's the queen of the gays who love costumes. and they all kept going, God, I can't believe you don't watch RuPaul's Drag Race. And I was a student and I didn't have time. And I finally sat down and watched it. And Jamie and I got really in love with it. And that was around the time Gaga stopped touring. So that was how we kind of started traveling for drag shows. And the more we watched, the more we thought everybody needs to see this. I want to do this and I love this. And the girls that we were filming were really, really encouraging. So it started actually as a joke, as a wordplay. Bianca Del Rio once made a joke, oh, my favorite drag hags are here, and hags are witches, witches travel in a coven. So I was like, yeah, we're the Drag Coven. And Alaska was like, holy shit, that's exactly what you are. So it started as a joke, and then she was like, oh, well, you guys are the only people I know that take like pictures and videos not on like a potato cell phone. Like, I think this is our like second show ever together. She was like, I want these pictures, where do you post them? And we were like, I don't know, our Facebooks, like for my mom to see. Like, and she was like, no, I want them, like post them somewhere. So I, as a joke, made an Instagram and followed her, and she was our first follower. She followed it back, and so it kind of just started as a joke and snowballed from there and like hasn't stopped yet. So that's my background in drag.
So you said that you did a master's thesis in feminist performing, correct?
It was a master's of women's and gender studies, and I studied the way that Lady Gaga specifically used theories of gender performativity to basically enact in her music videos different representations of gender and how it's a performative social construct. And then furthering from that, I looked at ways in which she used things like social media to turn her fans from passive consumers of a message that she was feeding them into active producers of like activist content by the way that they cosplay and recreate the alternative gender performances that she does in her music videos.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm sure that defense was insane. Just trying to
explain it. It was interesting. I actually was the first person to graduate from the program because it was a brand new program.
Oh, okay.
And there'd been, you know, it was, there were eight of us, and I think only like six and a half of us were going to finish on time. And the, when it came down to it, it was me and one other girl, and her project was this really heavy, like she'd traveled to Nigeria and done groundwork research, and it was this really heavy like racial theory and racial politics thing, and it was gonna be one of us two that finished first, and she kind of was like being pushed by the department to be the first one because it was such a prestigious like important sounding project, but she was very much not ready, and she was very like, I'm almost done but I'm not there yet and I don't know why they're pushing me, whereas for me I was like, I've been done for 6 weeks and I'm just sitting here and everyone's ignoring me because I wrote about costumes and pop music. When it came down to it, I finished first, and she was like, yeah, no, fuck it up, you finished first, like go. So I did end up defending first, despite some shady dealings in the department trying to like make me this. They were like, yeah, no offense, but for our first one, we want something serious. And I was like, that's nice, I don't care. And I defended first, and just to like really, because of everything that had gone on and consistent with the theme that was like kind of throughout my degree, to really just like piss them off, I went in full male drag. And I showed up, and like the dean of the university was there, and there was like all these, there was like all the, you defend in front of a team of people anyways, but then there were all these extra people because I was the first. Mm-hmm. So I walked in with like a beard and like my titties bound down and like all this stuff. And I did my full performance in drag. And I had decided that in addition to the verbal defense that I was going to do, I had made sort of a, because the thesis was a lot about social networking and multimedia use and videos and homemade costumes versus homemade videos, and how like the practical and online elements played together in order to let these people who were maybe facing real world barriers to go out and do things like gender activism kind of transgress those by like crafting and using their cell phone cameras. So I had made like a multimedia video that was like the bulk of my presentation, and then I kind of summed it up as a man and like tied myself into the project. So it was an interesting defense. Everybody was like kind of silent when I was finished, and I was like, I'm gonna take a bow and go. And it actually ended up going really well.
Oh wow. So do you think that kind of pushback or that kind of energy that you had during your degree kind of pushed you whenever things happened to you or Drag Coven, whenever it came to drag performing or going to all these things?
Oh my gosh, yes. Being told I can't do something is, I think this is partially like the empowerment I get from drag, but also partially that like I'm just a lifelong little shit. So anytime I'm told that I can't do anything, I automatically want to do it and do it well. And I don't know why that is, but it's kind of working out so far. So I'm a pretty like motivated self-starter, but the second someone looks at me and goes, no, you're not good enough and you can't do that, I go, awesome, I'm going to do it and I'm going to get an A, or I'm going to do it and it's going to be on TV somewhere. Like, it's always kind of been something motivating. So then when we got into drag and it took a while for us to get hate that was like anything tangible besides like just, you know, bitter men who wanted to stand front row and were mad that we were there because we were quote unquote straight girls, and neither of us is straight, but like anything tangible, it took like a solid year and a half probably for us to get really like hated. And I've always kind of found that motivating, because a lot of it, I would say 90% of it, is unfounded and like not really based on fact. So it kind of makes me think, okay, well, if I'm being talked about, I'm doing something right. And if there are rumors flying around, people are really analyzing it enough that like a game of telephone is happening and things are getting twisted. So I'm just going to go out here and keep doing what I'm doing now that all eyes are on me, but I'm going to prove them all wrong. So I'm going to be my regular nice self and like not be the crazy bitch that Reddit says I am. Or I'm going to do, you know, that thing, I'm going to show up and I'm going to be front row, but it's not because I like push my way in or because I'm an entitled straight girl and I'm actually like an active supportive member of the queer community. And like, we don't really get a whole lot anymore usually. But there was a while there where, like, yeah, we faced a lot of backlash, and it didn't really, like, the positives have always outweighed the negatives, which we're really lucky for, but it definitely, like, put a little spark in my eye, and I'd be like, oh, you think I'm super hateful? Awesome. And I'd be, like, so incredibly nice and kind that I would start getting, like, like, messages from people being like, hey, I met you recently, and, like, you were so nice, even though I'd read on Reddit that you were such an asshole, and I believed it. Now I feel really bad because you were so nice. And I'd be like, you're welcome, I guess. Like, yeah, it definitely was. It was a motivator for me rather than like a tear me down. Oh my God, I can't do this anymore kind of thing.
So one of my favorite, I guess, merch pieces that y'all have or you have is I'm just here to steal men's jobs, which I don't know. How did that come about? Like, what was that in reference to? Was it like a Reddit post that somebody was just like, oh yeah? Or was it on Twitter? It was probably Twitter, but.
It was not actually. It was like real life, local scene drag drama that got really almost violent. And so the Toronto scene is largely, I mean, I sing its praises. It's not my original home in drag, but it's my current home in drag, even though I'm living in the suburbs now. Like, there are such good individuals in Toronto, but as a wider scene and as a system, it definitely faced like a period of really bad misogyny. And it was kind of as we were coming up, and I ended up causing a lot of problems because I guess previously there had been a couple, you know, AFAB female drag queens, hyper queens, queens like myself who had come in and kind of tried to get into it. And there was one or two other people besides myself and Jamie sort of like already working in the scene when we got there. And there were not many of us. I'm going to say there were maybe, it was like me, Jamie, and Dottie Dangerfield. And like, that was it. I think there was one other girl, but she had gotten caught up with school. And like, by the time I got there, she wasn't really doing it anymore. And when we started doing things like trying to enter competitions, we were told, well, I don't really know what you are, or what you do. And like, no, you can't. And we'd say, well, why? And they'd say, because you're a girl, because you have a vagina. And I, you know, at first, none of us were really going to say anything. And then my kind of whole, if you tell me I can't do it, I want to do it, instinct kicked in. And I really pushed back and was like, that's misogyny. It's also trans misogyny. That's ridiculous. This is really exclusive. And I tried to get people to talk to me about it, and no one was having it. Because it was just an era in the scene where there wasn't a lot of queer talent. There was just a lot of cis male drag queens doing a particular type of drag. And for the most part, they weren't horrible people. It was just like, this is what they've been taught. And not a lot of other people had popped up and said something else, with the exception of like the occasional female, like very femme presenting trans woman. And they were like completely unfamiliar with it. And then suddenly I was in the middle ranting and screaming about misogyny and scaring everybody. So that was a clash for a while. There was a situation where one of the leaders in the drag community, she's not so much that anymore, but at the time, really got aggressive with me. And there had been a point where I kept trying to talk to show producers and managers and be like, listen, like, there's a vast portion of your audience that feels excluded. Like, the way that you exclude AFAB people is also quite exclusionary to like trans women, because you're telling them they're only welcome because of their genitals. And that's really trans misogynistic on top of being misogynistic. So now a lot of the queens that you regularly work with and respect also feel disrespected and are on my side. And here's why it's a problem. And none of them would talk to me. None of them would deal with me. So I took it to the internet, because I was like, this is ridiculous and no one's doing anything. And a lot of the leading queens at the time, it's especially back then, it was kind of like a hard scene. There was a lot of competition. It was a lot of drag queens and not a lot of gigs, not a lot of bars. Venues were closing. There weren't any open stages at the time. A lot of competition existed. And so a lot of the queens, although good people, would sort of come in my DMs and go, oh my God, I'm behind you. I'm with you. Like, you're totally right. And then publicly they'd continue working at these bars or continue working at these events. So I wasn't getting a lot of outward support. And it was just me with, you know, cis gay male audience members who didn't really understand what was going on in the scene itself, because they were observers, just going, well, who's this little fucking entitled, again, always assuming I was straight, because, you know, queer women don't exist, just who is she screaming, and why is she so entitled, and why does she want what we have, and this is appropriation, and fully just missing the point. So I took it to the internet, I explained the whole thing, and this particular drag queen lost her entire ever-loving mind, went on a slanderous, hateful campaign for days and days in capital letters, status after status after status about how I was just a terrible person and an entitled bitch and all this stuff. And at first I was kind of living for it, so I just kind of didn't really weigh in and let her do. I was like, eventually it'll be like a toddler having a temper tantrum, she'll tire herself out. And she didn't. And it got really aggressive and it started getting violent and she started threatening me and people started bringing it to me being like, it's really getting out of control. Like, you got to say something to calm it down. So I finally wrote like one response and we had some interaction. And in it, she basically told me, you know, I'm going to get my men to like, you better watch your back at gigs. You don't deserve to be safe in this scene. You know, we'd all be better off if like you killed yourself, but watch out that someone doesn't do it for you. And all this just threats on my life just, and I'm sure they were probably unfounded. It was actually a repetitive like cycle of behavior that I wasn't the first person she'd done this to. And several of the drag queens who were also leaders in the community, like, had also experienced this. And I don't know why she still gets away with it. I don't know why she's still booked. I don't know why it ever, nobody's ever done anything about it, with the exception of me and following my interaction with her, a couple other people. But, like, it's just one of those things. And it's kind of a problem that's more with, like, the older producers who were from like her beginning time, and like there's not much we can do to make them stop booking her, so it's kind of an unfortunate catch 22. But anyways, it got really crazy, and eventually so many people were against her, and she actually did lose a couple bookings, and she came to me and she apologized, and I was like, I'm like, for the sake of my own like easiness in the drag scene, sure, I'll accept your apology, but also like, if you could stay away from me, that'd be great. And if you can't, next time I'll get the police involved. Yeah, no, it's not necessary to do that. It's really not. I think maybe a year later, almost to the day, she did it again, and I don't even remember why. It was something that like I hadn't done, but like she'd like misread something, I don't know. Happened again, more threats. She did actually convince a few men to stop me from gig to gig. I got stalked in the village. But again, I was very like, I mean, I'm an academic. I'm a writer for a living. I'm a pretty calm person, even though I'm feisty. Like it was the kind of thing where I didn't have to say much because like her behavior and the behavior of those who were kind of in cahoots with her spoke for itself. So I didn't really have to do anything. And that calmed down. And about 6 months later, something happened that was, someone said something about how this queen who had harassed me shouldn't be booked because a friend of ours wanted to put on a gig and he wanted to book her, but he also wanted to book me. And before that news even got back to me, another girl jumped in and was like, why would you try to book Courtney with her, like her abuser? Why don't even send her that message? Why would you try to book her with that person? You can't do that, especially as someone who like considers yourself her friend. And the guy really didn't get it. It was just a privilege and naivety thing. Like, I don't even think he was trying to be malicious. And he was like, I don't get it. I thought they squashed that. And the friend was like, okay, but you're still asking her to like work with someone who's like openly harassed her to the point that I did actually end up like putting moves in with the police. And like the only reason she leaves me alone now is because like she knows that like I've got police files open. So she basically was like, don't message Courtney, don't book her. And she didn't say don't book that drag queen. She said, don't message Courtney about this gig. I'm telling you, she doesn't want it. And like, it'll just be a fight. Don't even bother with it because she doesn't deserve the stress that comes with, do I take the gig? Do I not? Blah, blah, blah. So basically talked him out of gigging me, which I didn't mind. The story that went around is that it was not another girl but me, and that it had not been don't book Courtney. It had been don't book that other drag queen.
Oh my God.
So this goes around behind my back for God knows how long, a couple weeks. Another queen who was friends with the original harassing queen, who again, once again, had a history of bullying, harassment, like violence, like all this stuff. Like, I swear to God, the Toronto scene outside these two is really good. it's just, you know, bad seeds. Suddenly out of nowhere, I think Jamie and I were like I know exactly where we were. We were in Ohio with Ginger Minj eating McDonald's in our car. and my phone goes off and I open it and I'm suddenly getting like hundreds of messages and texts and tags. And it was that this second queen who, unfortunately, her volatility was a lot more rooted in rather severe struggles with mental health and like never having sought out the care or treatment or support that she needed. So I was a little less inclined to like really get nasty with her. Whereas the previous queen, like she's just a bad person. So I was surprised when this came up, but it was basically a huge thing in which she wrote that like I'd spent all year waltzing into bars local and elsewhere and demanding to speak to male show producers and making long-winded speeches about how like men in drag should not be hired because they don't deserve anything and how I don't think that they should have jobs and they don't deserve their gigs and only women should be hired. And people kind of started hopping on this comment on this status, which was public, being like, something tells me you don't have the right information. Like, I don't think that's what happened. Where are you getting this story? Like, you do know that Courtney works like internationally in drag. And if this was the habit that she was going around, like telling every bar she went to that male drag queens shouldn't be hired, like she probably wouldn't still be working in drag. Like, that's not a thing. And she was like, no, it's fact. I heard it. I saw it with my own eyes. So I hop in and I'm like, hey, would love to know where you heard this story, who the producer was, what bar you're talking about, which queens I've apparently blocked gigs from, and I'll fully own up to if I did it. But if not, I literally included like a log of all the drag coven shows we'd been to, every gig that I had. Like I sent my calendar and was like, these are all the places I've been at and these are her producers every single show I've been at in the last 6 months. By all means, feel free to ask them because I'm telling you what you're saying is not true. It basically comes out that she had heard the story of the other girl confronting the show producer about trying to book me with my harasser, and all the facts had gotten changed, and she thought that I had just said, no, that should be my gig and other drag queens shouldn't be booked because I want everything. So it was not me, not what I said, and not actually what happened. And instead of when we finally like caught her in it and people started going, girl, like you've got the complete backwards story, and oh, now that you say that, we actually know what you're talking about. Courtney wasn't even there. Courtney didn't even know until like months later. She kind of like just lost it in anger that like we'd hooped her in her story and started just screaming insults at me. And one of the things that made me laugh the hardest in like when she just kind of started spiraling out was that I was an evil she bitch from hell who was just here to take the jobs of men. And I lost it. I laughed so hard I thought I was gonna pee my pants. I didn't think a t-shirt that says evil she bitch from hell would sell quite as widely as I'm just here to take the jobs of men, although it's like still definitely on the back burner. I screenshot it and sent it to everybody. Like I was like, that's it, that's what I do. And it was the part that kind of like, oh, there were people from the international drag scene, because it was all public on a status. I'd been tagged 1,000 times. And it was because it was an extension of these other previous problems, which had also happened publicly and on Facebook. Everybody knew the history of this. And by everybody, I mean the producers of RuPaul's Drag Race, notable Ru girls, like girls from the Australian scene, like in UK queen, like everybody had seen this go down, and now it was happening again, but with this hilarious, incoherent rant about how I was just here to like take men's jobs at the end. So it kind of just took off from there. And I remember Raja getting underneath and going, I don't know who this is, but damn, you pissed them off. And if you don't make t-shirts out of this, like I'll personally fight you. So immediately we're on drag queen merch. So Bible Girl messaged me and was like, no, I'll like, I don't even care if I'll design it for you if you need me to. Like, and she didn't. Someone else offered me art, and I bought the little design off them. But it was a t-shirt within probably 2 days. So that is the long-winded story of how that merch came to be.
So how do you think feminism? You've already kind of delved into it. Feminism has really been part of your drag persona.
Oh, in a huge way. So I do drag because it lets me sort of live out my femininity and communicate myself to the world in a way that's a lot more on my terms than what society typically tells you that a person like me, even as a cisgendered female, can be, can do, should want, should look like, all the kinds of things that society usually feeds to you. Through drag, I get to reclaim that and sort of play with it, twist it on its head, degender it, hypergender it, whatever I'm feeling that day. And then at the end, still say, but I'm still a woman. I'm still a female person. I'm still a femme individual. And I still am that no matter what I look like or what I'm doing or what I'm eating or where I'm standing. Like, so that's why I do drag. But the basis of why that appealed to me so much, above and beyond the fact that drag also involves like musical theater and dancing and sparkles and makeup and all the things I loved as a kid, like it's playing dress up for a living. The basis of why that appealed to me so much and how I established that is why I do drag is all rooted in the feminism my mom taught me from like right from babyhood. But then that I learned, you know, just through experiences growing up, and then also through I'm fortunate and privileged enough to have a feminist education as well. So those things kind of set a huge foundation for me already being like an intersectional queer feminist. And then on top of it, I found this art that was like the perfect tool through which I could tie myself into all of these theories that I was already living by and like really kind of valuing in society. And like as a person who wanted to queer the heteronormative, basically, like just queer the social norm, and didn't see myself reflected in any of the values that were like put on me as a kid. And like, I mean, I was raised in a pretty like liberal, like awesome household, but even still, like there are certain social expectations put on women and girls that I was like, I'm not into, I don't want this. Like, this isn't like what's going to make me happy or who I am or whatever. So a unique combination of feminism and drag, and particularly how I can manifest my feminism using drag as a tool for that, is like, that's inherent to like literally my everyday life.
So as you stated, you have a unique type of feminism, because usually feminist, or at least second wave feminist and some third wave feminists, find drag as sort of misogynistic in itself, because mm-hmm. and sort of, I saw a title of an article that said woman face or girl face. Somebody's using girl face. So how do you think with this new wave of feminism, like, and more, not more, but more femme presenting or femme queens or abfab queens going into drag is going to change that perspective?
I think it's a natural evolution. I think it is just the next step in applying the theories that the second and third wave feminism, tenets of feminism, taught us. I mean, previous generations of feminism, of feminists, have always talked about how gender is a social construct. Mm-hmm. They might have done so in a binary way, in that this is male, but you can also this, or this is female, and typically it doesn't that. I think this is literally just like taking that and springboarding it, and that's where you're getting this kind of new, for lack of a better term, all nearly post-gender wave of feminism. And I do think it is still feminism, because it is still rooted in the idea of, I'm losing my voice, sorry, actively working against like a cis male established heteronormative society. But I think things like drag and just access to the internet and dissemination of wider information and like way more prevalence of like queer theory and like, again, post-gender theories, like I think it all it stems from like that was a nice starting point, but we're beyond that now, and those things are almost, it sounds harsh, but for lack of a better term, like the binary conceptions of even things like gender as a construct have become a little too archaic for how far a lot of queer communities have begun thinking about gender and how it ascribes or does not ascribe to their life and their experience. So when I come to something like drag, even though like my formal education was rooted in a lot of, again, the waves of feminism that you're talking about, which I still think have a lot of value and like, again, fully formed to my base knowledge, I think it also lets me understand gender and the performance of gender in a different way, I guess. Because if you can look at gender, binary gender, for example, and say, oh, it's completely constructed, and for, you know, to Sparks notes that it's nonsense that we made up, then theoretically you can also say the binary is nonsense that we made up, and you can extrapolate from there. So when I look at drag, I do not see it as an appropriation of experience insofar as it is done well and not rooted in misogynistic portrayals of femininity, period, regardless of who's doing it, or whether it's intended as misogyny. So I definitely think that there are performances or people out there who undoubtedly do root a lot of their performance of women and the feminine in a really outdated misogynist way. But I find them, and that this is partially like the privilege that I've had in traveling, but I find them few and far between nowadays. Mm-hmm. I find them, even if a performance is rooted in a stereotypical portrayal of femininity that one not realizing what's happening might find say misogynist or offensive, I find that 99% of the time, if I watch the entire performance and listen to the person speak after and I know a little more about their career, they actually perform that portrayal with a certain reverence that gives power to the character and almost twists it on his head and lets the audience see, like, this kind of person still has value, so it's fucked up that we make fun of them for being this way. And maybe we poke fun of them a little bit or tease because it's fun, but we don't say they're a less valuable type of woman or they're a less valuable type of person. So for example, like drag queens that dress as, like, when Willem plays his totally ditzy blonde, ha ha ha, I'm a mattress character, da 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 da, the more that you watch of Willem, the more that you realize he's not saying that because he thinks that all women are mattress sluts. He's doing it because when he was growing up, the women that gave him the most protection and power and empowerment and encouraged him to be himself and made sure that he was okay were those strong women who actually had a lot of valuable characteristics despite being quote-unquote ditzy and quote-unquote slutty. And they were put down by society, but they were actually still totally valuable members of his neighborhood. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I find that's the case with a lot of drag. I also think that the idea that femininity is inherent solely and only to women and AFAB people is no longer one that gets a lot of traction, particularly like the queerer the community you're getting into. Men can be feminine. Non-binary people can be feminine. I know trans men who were feminine when they were young and female presenting, and now they're male presenting in their daily life, but when they do drag, they're feminine again. Anyone can be feminine. Anyone can take value from femininity, present themselves in a feminine way. And that doesn't mean they're not how they identify. And it goes the same with masculinity. It's just that my experience has always been rooted in femininity. So I talk about that a lot, but the same applies to masculinity. Women can be masculine. Like, it goes both ways. So I find that to say, oh, well, drag and the act of drag is like appropriating only female experience and it's woman face. They're appropriating my characteristics kind of ascribes to the problematic notion that only women can be female. Only women can have long hair. Only women can look glamorous. Only women can wear nice dresses. Only women can put on nails. And that's not something that's generally accepted. Pretty worldwide, but particularly like in queer and you know, the gay bar downtown. That's the second part of it for me. The third part is that even if you want to look at it in a more binary way, I think that there's a certain power in watching a person who, even as a gay man, a cisgendered man, has a certain level of privilege. Sure, they might face oppression based on their sexuality, but they're still often regarded as having all of these really highly valued, privileged male characteristics by virtue of the fact that they are a man. So for a man who is told, hey, a lot of your, to this day, still told, like, a lot of your characteristics are preferable because women are weak and women are this and women are that and you're a strong man. Maybe not as strong as a straight man down the street. Maybe you should work on that, but you're still a man. I think that for a person like that to shed those more valued characteristics and when they want to feel empowered, take the characteristics of femininity that they see in the people they admire around them and put those on instead to become a more confident character or person or version of themselves, I think that puts a lot of power in femininity and the feminine experience and the women who have taught them about those feminine characteristics. And I think it really like puts a lot of wind in our sails and lifts us up a little bit because they're choosing to shed the things that they're told are preferable about them just by virtue of the fact that they were like assigned male at birth and born with a penis. And instead they're kind of taking a step over into our camp and saying, actually, I see a lot of value in this. So I'm going to put this on and try this on to make myself feel better, because it really is severely in the minority that you now meet a drag queen who's literally just dressing as a woman and spending, I mean, by the time you're done your weekly gigs, half your life, quote unquote, as a woman, just to make fun of and put down women. Like, it just, it happens, but it's not the majority, and it's not what like the international drag scene is currently about. And I think that the people who think that it is, and who insist that like that's what drag is, and it's just woman face, and it's an appropriation of experience, I don't think they've done the research into contemporary drag, and I don't think they necessarily know a whole lot about it. And I think that they'd really benefit from and probably get a lot of positivity and empowerment of looking into contemporary drag as it is now, where it's not even necessarily linked to gender. You might only be putting on certain notable female characteristics because that's just how you want to look that day, or that's a piece of someone, a strong female figure that you admired in your life, or you've decided that you really just think that color hair looks pretty on you. Like, I think it's just gone so much beyond that. I also think, like, personally, it's a huge part of it for me, and when I talk about these things, and I always kind of contextualize that, like, I am cisgendered female and have never really wavered in that gender identity. However, based on all of the experiences and knowledge I've just talked about, like, I think my sense of gender and, like, quote-unquote femininity and what a female person is and what they can look like and who they can be and what they can do, like, I think that's much wider than the average individual, particularly perhaps an average individual who is not that versed in, say, queer language or feminist theories or whatever else. So I think also my point of self-reflexivity is that I also go, I'm definitely looking at this from a standpoint of, you can't really appropriate, you can't really call it just simple hardline appropriation of female experience or woman face if the things that you're talking about, certain aspects of femininity, are not solely linked to just like the average woman. Like, there are definitely like trans women who still experience misogyny in a way that an AFAB woman probably has her whole life. There are definitely, you know, gender fluid but AMAB people who have similarly been knocked down or told that their bodies are not right, or had the media devalue, you know, the way they look or their weight or their characteristics or whatever, in a way that is very like typical of misogyny. And all of that is based in the fact that all three of those people that I've just described, despite not quote unquote being what stereotypical society would define as a woman, still experience misogyny and still experience certain things based on femininity. And that's not to say that like your average cisgendered woman doesn't have a particular point of like very specific oppression that like absolutely deserves attention, and that like feminist was definitely like built on the backs of, and all of that stuff. But I think that when it comes to concepts of gender bending within arts like drag that are really operating from like a post-gendered structure, to try and apply that really binary idea that like, no, you're appropriating only my experience, when the fact of the matter is it's not necessarily anymore only your experience, is like a really limiting and kind of outdated view of the art. And I just really want to take those people to like a quality drag show and be like, do you still think this amazing queer person, who, do you think Sasha Velour is doing woman face? Like, it's not about that.
So, okay, with the popularization of RuPaul's Drag Race, do you think the regular everyday feminist, not the one that's versed in feminist theory, doesn't have that background education, is changing their mind about what feminism is, about what being femme or being a woman, no matter what it, do you think that's changing because of RuPaul's Drag Race and the prevalence of queers in the media?
I do. I think that it would change it even more if these stereotypical average like AFAB feminist saw herself a little more explicitly in it, i.e. hire AFAB and Hyper Queens and put them on the show. But we're not there yet. So great. I think that would like really hit it home because I think they'd realize they're literally fighting against their own. Mm-hmm. But for where we're at now, I still think that it does, because I think that at this point, you know, for all my, I love Drag Race more than almost anything, but that doesn't mean I don't have my critiques. However, putting my critiques for casting aside, I think that they are still seeing people who identify as gender fluid. They're seeing people who have either come out as right after or come on the show as trans women. They're seeing very effeminate men, but who still hard fast identify as men, but still have all these experience based on the fact that there are feminine characteristics inherent to them as a person that they were abused for in similar ways to what a lot of women experience growing up. So I think that on top of the fact that then the show still has quite a reverence, with the exception of maybe the occasional off-color joke, for female icons, femininity and glamour, the power that certain female characteristics, both, you know, personality characteristics and bodily characteristics really possess. I think the show is still a decent gateway into like learning more about and exploring drag and the power that it has to do things for femininity, but also then beyond that, gender as gender in general. You know what I mean? So I think that it's almost like a taster menu for like getting into all of the queerness. And it's still a pretty like mainstream digestible taster menu, but like that's what a lot of people need. And I think that it's a good starting point to then springboard off of and go and explore different gender theories and more queer language and the history of who does drag and when and why and how. And I think the fact that you're getting to see people like, you know, crazy high pageant queens versus Sasha Velour, who does talk about her gender fluidity, and you know, versus Peppermint, who talks about being a trans woman, versus like Sharon Needles, who's, you know, at the time that she was on the show, just spooky and costumey and pumped to be there. Like, I think you're getting a wider view, and I think you're also getting a sense of, while it does do all this stuff where it puts a lot of value on like femininity and the female experience, it also degenders drag quite a lot, because there'll be, you know, you'll go for 4 episodes where no one talks about gender at all and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So I think it is like a good accessible thing. And that's not to say like, of course, anything mainstreaming is riddled with problems. I think there are definitely certain ways in which the show has like pandered a little bit to like digestible straight audiences, and it's like, I never want to see like queer culture put into like a straight cookie cutter box, but there's also the knowledge that like to get it on TV you have to work with the norm a little bit, or it's not going to be on TV, and then all of the jobs and opportunities and the industry boom that Drag Race has factually created wouldn't be happening. So I mean, for all of the critiques, I still think that like Drag Race is the greatest thing that's happened to drag in years ever, maybe. So I like how I said, I'd like to take like that, you know, angry woman face writing feminist to a drag show. Like, I'd absolutely love to sit her down and hand her all the seasons of Drag Race too, like, just as a, okay, watch this and then we'll talk.
So you travel a lot, so like I said in my email, I do follow you online. You just got
amazing.
You just,
poor you.
Huh? Poor me.
I'm just kidding.
I feel bad for the people who follow me, because it's just like history, drag, me ranting about stuff. I'm like, well,
that sounds perfect.
Yeah. Me talking about how I love cheese but can't eat it. Like, that's my Twitter.
Rough.
Do you think with you traveling with a lot of the Rue girls recently, and traveling to them, do you think that's changed your perspective on drag as well as your own brand of feminism?
Oh, completely. It's just, it's like taking like sample groups for an experiment, and the bigger the sample group, like the more your results are going to vary.
Yeah.
Like, we just have a huge sample sizing, like, which is a privilege and a treat. And like, I think I'd be a mess of a human if I couldn't do it anymore. Like, it's like I had an idea of what drag was originally, and then I discovered Drag Race and went, oh wow, there's all these different kinds of things, because the show does, for someone with no drag knowledge, like introduce them to a lot of different kinds of queens. Mm-hmm. And then we went even further than that and started traveling for however many years. And I have met every kind of drag artist of every kind of identity, of every kind of style. And it's like, it's my favorite thing. Like, that's more why I still do drag than even my own drag. And like, don't get me wrong, I love and adore my own drag. But if someone said to me tomorrow, like, you have to choose between being a drag artist yourself or documenting drag and in the way that you do through Drag Coven, oh my God, fuck my drag. It doesn't matter. Like, there are so many people already making an impact similar, and not to devalue what I do, because it's impactful and it's important, and I know that. But because I know that, I also know that there are so many people doing what I do to an equal or similar level that, like, I would personally rather, like, I'm so impressed by the diversity and the talent and what I've experienced and seen out there that, like, I think it is literally imperative that it be documented. And that's kind of why we're still doing what we're doing. People need to see these people. It also, kind of like what I talked about with my thesis when I said that, like, the access to queerness online sort of transgresses, like, real world boundaries for the Lady Gaga fans. Doing something like what we do with Drag Coven, and there's a couple, like, other groups that kind of do what we do as well, but, like, maybe on more, like, a localized capacity, or, like, they're students, so they just, like, don't get to travel as much of us. Or, like, we're still the ones doing it on, like, the wider scale, but, like, I'm pleased to see that other people are kind of popping up and doing it, too, because that means, like, the corners that we're not reaching are still getting documented, and we don't have to feel like we're, like, failing miserably. But I think as much drag should be documented as humanly, physically, spiritually, mentally possible, because I think it's so important, particularly in the ways that it is becoming more and more varied. And I know there's this sense that, like, because of Drag Race, like, everyone's got a cookie cutter face and everyone's painting the same Instagram, whatever. I think it just seems like that because we're all on the internet. Like, I think it seems like that because there's so many people doing drag. So, like, yes, there's going to be some overlap. I think in reality, drag is, like, more widespread and diverse and getting more input from more smart minds than ever before. Yeah. And I think that if we, like, removed the social media lens from it a little, we'd see that. So I think it's important to, I think it's important to put it all online, because then that kid who is facing real world boundaries, whether it be they're too young, they can't get in the bar, or they live in a place where it's not safe for them to come out as queer, or, you know, they're disabled and their local bar is not accessible where they can see the stage, or the person is a stay-at-home mom and has a baby and can't go out to the club, whether they're straight or queer doesn't matter. Like, I think it's just important to document it and put it online, or put it wherever is accessible for people, because then they still get to sort of connect with the art and learn more about different performers, and they watch it and then they hop on their Twitter and they discuss it and they make friends with somebody who is also interested in the same queens as them, because, like, nobody in their little small town in Kentucky, like, wants to talk about drag queens. But then talking about drag queens leads them to learning more about drag history, which leads them to maybe exploring their own identity or learning more about the history of people like their gay brother or whatever it is. Like, I think it's all sort of like a catch 22, not a catch 22, but like a cyclical that system works. That kind of feeds into itself in a way that, like, I really hope to continue seeing. And that's kind of why, I mean, like, also, yes, it's fun and I like making friends. So, like, woohoo, I get to travel. But it's also, like, every time we get to travel somewhere new, it's just, like, it's really exciting that I get to, like, video somebody new. And then it also is, like, yes, the fans are being introduced to more artists and more types of drag and more different styles. But then we also have, you know, promoters contact us and say, I watched this video, who's this queen, maybe I'll book her. Then there's sort of like a cross-pollination of drag queens happening. There's also people going, oh, so I already knew drag queens, but then you filmed this drag king or this hyper king or this gender bending person who doesn't identify with king or queen, and now I'm looking at them and I'm learning about that as well. Or you know, drag queen A comes to me and says, hey, for reasons I don't want you to ask me about, I would really like an HQ file of that one performance you did around this particular date. Know that they're auditioning for RuPaul's Drag Race. But I get to be satisfied with the knowledge that, like, we help them out a little, because rather than having, like, a potato quality cell phone video in their garage, like, I have their full performance with their backup dancers and they can put that in their video. And whether they get on or not, like, at least I help them in any way I could as someone who, like, doesn't work for the show and doesn't even qualify to be on it. So it's like, there's so many facets to like what we and others like us do. And I think that the, like, my emphasis on traveling forward is like huge. Like I had apartment problems recently, and I probably lost like in property and loss of income and like costs and health issues and all that kind of stuff over the 2 years, probably 50K. And I still traveled through it because I was like, you don't understand, this feeds my soul. Like I have to document the drag. There are drag queens doing really important shit and no one else is videoing it. I have to be their front row or I'll die. Like it was, I'm just really passionate about it because I don't think that, I don't know when the next time drag trends like this will be. I don't know if it ever will again. Maybe this will last. Maybe it won't. Eventually, drag might go skittering back under the rug into the, you know, black market underground of society. Like, I think we're in a really cool wave. And I think that we'd all be, like, kind of silly not to take advantage of that right now and kind of hit it at its high. So right now where there's a drag queen on every corner that I can film, I'm going to film as many of them as I possibly can.
You'll be, like, at that corner at that time.
Yeah. Oh, I'm going to be doing this when I'm 82 and like Alaska's on stage in her rhinestone walker.
Yes.
Like that's the plan. Like,
cause I just heard.
Yeah, her exactly. Like I just, you just don't know if like, it, I don't know when it'll all, if it'll all stop. Cause it's such a weird thing that's never trended this way before. Mm-hmm. And that is thanks to RuPaul's Drag Race. So yeah, I think it's really important. Yeah.
So what's next for drag, Kevin? Y'all going back on the road, I'm assuming.
Oh, always. Oh. Jamie's in Phoenix right now, I think.
Oh, jeez.
I'm home trying to get some writing done because I actually still do have a day job and 3 freelance jobs, and that's 6 jobs in total.
Jeez.
She's been helping Nina West a little bit because that's her drag mom and she's on season 11. I am one of the 2 tour assistants for Brooklyn Heights right now because she's one of my best friends.
Not your drag mother.
Not my drag mother.
As people like to
neither of them's actually. Oh my God, it was so funny. Well, I do this really bad thing where like kind of stemming from like, you know, when Trixie yells at people, apologize, mom.
Oh yeah.
I started like kind of mimicking that. And like if Brooke's like a little bit older and she gets very like big brother sometimes. So I'll be like, gee, thanks, mom. Or, oh, sorry, mom. And I've started doing that really sarcastically. And I think people keep kind of picking between that and the fact that, like, I'm very clearly obsessed with this person. Like, I think people just made the assumption that, like, that's my drag mom. And she was like, oh, God, I'm not responsible. I was like, gross. But no, I just, she's just a really good friend of mine. And so we're the next year is going to be a lot of Nina West and Brooklyn Heights content. Because we actually... We've been working on certain things with them for a number of years that sort of all culminated in this. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like seeing my own hard work, but just invested into another person rather than myself, which is like just as rewarding. And that's all like kind of paying off right now. So we're kind of just like riding that wave and seeing how it goes. But we're also still definitely working our own things. Like we'll be at Toronto Pride. We have a whole bunch of Pride gigs. I'm going to Columbus Pride and leading a panel for a corporate event.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's all about like gender and drag with a bunch of the queens, with Virginia West, who's Nina's mom. We're going to DragCon. Jamie will be at Nina's booth. I'll be at Brooklyn's, but we'll also still be doing
DragCon.
We're Kevin still doing DragCon. Yeah,
be like called out by RuPaul. Where's the DragCon girls?
Oh my God, Michelle said they're in the bathroom. We were not. We were at the Hurricane Bianca premiere. Whoops. that was fun. We didn't think he was gonna. I don't know. We've seen the keynote speech like several at the same time every time, which I have full respect for. But when we got the chance to go to the other thing, I was like, well, I've seen the keynote speech. Like, no one really cares if we're there or not because we can't film it anyway. So let's just go. Of course, that's the one time he decided that we were like the greatest thing ever. Oh my God. Vanjie came up to me afterwards and was like, girl, oh my God, where were
girl.
You? It was so awkward. And I was like, oh, I was watching it on a live stream. When did I? But yeah, so we're, oh my God, we're doing all kinds of things. We want to go to Europe again, but we don't think it'll happen. We're poor.
It happened.
We went to Drag World last year, and it was amazing. We'd love to go to Austin Drag Fest, but again, I'm not sure that's going to be feasible.
If you do, we'll see. I hope I get to meet you because I might be performing there. Might. I applied.
Really?
I applied.
Oh, my God. That's so cool. Oh, amazing. Well, we had been in talks of potentially working media for them in various capacities. But they're still like really early on in the process. Yeah. So like I haven't talked to them about it in a little while, but rest assured I'll be checking in on that because that's something I'd love. We've never gotten to go. So I just have to let my cat out. Hold on. There you go. Yeah, that's something we've never gotten to do. It's like the only drag festival we've never been to. So we'd love to do that. But other than that, yeah, it's just a lot of filming, a lot of assisting, a lot of carting Brooklyn's t-shirts around, a lot of our own gigs. I just got a heavy metal themed gig with a band named after a dinosaur.
So rock on.
There's that. Yeah, so a lot of stuff. We're literally just kind of doing whatever we can fit in our schedule without like
spreading yourself too thin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, no, we might be doing that a little bit, but we're still alive. It's fine.
You're like, I'm okay. It's fine.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll be fine. But yeah, right now we're mostly gearing up for like a few things in April. Like Alaska's having a Lady Gaga themed show in New York, so I immediately canceled everything else that I was doing and ran. And then DragCon and then Pride. And then like once we've survived that, we'll see. But yeah, lots of stuff. Pride, so much stuff.
Pride season's always the like worst season. Be like, so what are you doing? Everything.
And it's World Pride in New York.
Oh, goodness.
Oh, everything. Yeah. But then at the same time, we're also, like, as much as I love Nina and Brooklyn, like, more than freaking life itself, but at the same time, I also want, like, we have such a reputation for grabbing so many different kinds of photos and videos of all different people and all different styles that, like, I want to make sure we're still doing that in some capacity. And, like, obviously, we fully tweeted and we're like, hey, it's going to be a really Nina and Brooklyn heavy year because it's a really big thing happened to people who we, like, love and who have taken very good care of us. Because they really, like, Brooke got me through those apartment things I was talking about. Mm-hmm. And, like, Nina has put up with us and helped us out for just years showing up in Columbus. So, like, she's family and, like, so, but we still want to try and make it to like the smaller gigs in between and see, you know, the girls who we've met through, because we started traveling through Drag Race, but the coolest part about it, as much as I've loved, I mean, these were open friends with people that I once only ever watched on TV. And I think that's really special and really impressive. And I'm so like grateful for those friends. But at the same time, it's just as cool that, we've gotten to meet so many of like the local girls from various local scenes across the world because we traveled to go see those queens. So they've almost been like a point of access to us to all different scenes in all different cities where we've made some really, really amazing friends. So like I never thought I'd be like watching a drag show like in Prague in a sweaty Polish basement in Krakow in, you know, like we've gotten to meet local queens in those capacities through the way that like people throw events for RuPaul's Drag Race. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure like there's still an element of that too. Like as much as I could sit and talk about Brooklyn all day, like I want to like, film other people as well. So like, yeah. So like I've been trying to do my best like between zipping her zippers up and making sure she's sorted. Then I'll like run out and try and film whoever's on stage and then run back and then I'll film her and then run back and change her as quickly as I possibly can so I can run back out and go film whoever's on there. And yeah, so it's been chaos, but it's like very fun, very worth it. Like we're just trying to like kind of use what we're doing, the opportunities we're afforded through like through what we do and what we're doing with the bigger name girls. Like I'm trying to also use that as like a way to increase what we do like just everywhere else in drag, like just keep it really, I don't know, what we've always done, I guess,
balanced,
but just hopefully in new cities.
Yeah. All right, well that's all I have, those are all the questions. Hopefully
awesome.
Hopefully y'all make it down to Austin Drag Fest.
I would love that. We've been to Houston, but we've never been to Austin.
I know. I saw that y'all were in Houston. I'm from Houston originally. And I was like,
oh, amazing.
And I had been following y'all for like a year by then. I was like, what? They're in town?
Oh, yeah, that was wild.
And I didn't get to meet them.
Yeah, that was wild. That was because we didn't even go for drag. We went for
Gaga.
The Super Bowl. But they brought us for 5 days and then they didn't really do anything with us for like 3 of those days. Like the Super Bowl day was obviously busy. And then the day before that, they took us to this like Super Bowl experience camp thing. Oh, and I was like, you carted in a bunch of gays and you just decided this, sure.
Let's do so the Jamie butch and I thing.
Went yeah. And I mean, it was fun. Like, it was an experience. We got memorabilia. Like, I dove into a pool of Skittles, like, whatever. It was fine. I'm pretty sure I met some famous people I didn't recognize because I don't do sports. But it was fun. I walked around and drag creeping people out. That's always a blast.
Always.
And, like, those were Gaga fans that, like, we've known for 8 years, but we only ever get to see every two or so. Yeah. So that was neat. But then, like, for the previous 3 days, like, it wasn't like we were part of the show. We didn't have to rehearse or anything. So we were just – I literally think they just brought us in extra early so that, like, we were there. And they didn't have, like, guest of honor. We were called, like, the Pepsi guest of honor or whatever. Like, they didn't have guest of honor. People just, like, stranded in airports in case, like, some kind of crazy weather hit or – so we were just there and – the first night, everybody, like, drank in the hotel and had a big party, and we were kind of like, I mean, it was cute to catch up, but, like, I don't want to party every single night. Jamie and I don't drink. So the second night, everybody was, like, hungover and complaining that they were bored, and we were like, we're leaving. Like, we're gonna – I posted on Facebook and said, like, do I know drag queens in Houston? Awesome. Fuck it up. We're happy to meet you because I'm bored. And we went in, and we – oh, my God. We made – like, we went to a show that had, like, 37 drag queens. Then they took us out for chicken afterwards. Jesus. And then the next day, they picked us up, and they took us for tacos, and we did a photo shoot in one of the queens' garages. And, like, our Gaga friends were so, like, in like curious about how long we'd been gone and where we went wearing wigs. And they ended up coming, like, tracking down the bar we were at and, like, coming to, like, experience the whole drag thing because they, like, weren't as familiar as we were. And so then they were all out in the drag bar, too. And it was really cool. We got totally taken care of, even though, like, the drag scene took care of us, even though, like, drag was absolutely not why we were there. So it was really cool. I had a really good time in Houston, actually.
Well, I'm glad my team took care of you. I'm just so glad.
It did.
Okay. Well, thank you for talking to me. Thank you for even, answering my email. Whenever I message people and they're like, yeah, I'll totally. Or, like, I've been putting this, because as a drag queen myself, I've been putting this on my Facebook and, like, hey, everyone, please talk to me if you're a feminist drag performer. And
yeah,
people are all like, yeah, I'll totally do this. And then they don't answer. So
yeah.
I was just like, I hope she doesn't think I'm weird. I follow her on the internet and I'm just going to email her from my professional, school email. So it doesn't look weird.
Oh no, it's totally cool. I actually do academic interviews a lot, but because I don't know, I think it's so cool. Like when I was doing my master's, I was one of the only people studying that kind of thing.
That's awesome.
So now the frequency with which I get asked to do stuff like this, I think is amazing. And, like, I will always say yes, even though, like, even if I don't have the time, I'm like, okay, I have 15 minutes on Tuesday. How quick can your questions be? Like, because it's important.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you so much. I took up an hour of your time, and I apologize. I'm sure you got so much writing to do, so.
I do, but don't worry, it's my fault for talking so much, so you're fine.
All right, thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Wow, that was a great episode. Hopefully you enjoyed the beginning of this wonderful series of interviews and self-reflection, because if you don't know, I'm a drag queen. Duh. Obviously, there would be a point of me bringing this up. If you want to see my drag announcement on my blog, unfortunately, you can't because the website is down right now. I'm currently working on the website. So stay tuned for updates on all my social media, which will be down below. And I will let y'all know when new episodes of the podcast are out, the website is back up, and just general things that are going on with my life. For instance, on Twitter, I've been bitching about grad school and also hyperventilating over Game of Thrones. And I have a academic conference next week. Trust me, it's going to be a whirlwind of me hyperventilating over everything for the next week and a half. So make sure you subscribe on everywhere that I am you can follow me and make sure you subscribe to the podcast where you listen to your podcast, whether it's on Anchor or on iTunes, Spotify. And if you feel very gracious, I'm not going to say gracious, if you feel the need to throw some money my way to keep this podcast going, whether that's, you know, a dollar here or a dollar there, make sure you use the Anchor support app or the support feature in Anchor to support your favorite podcasters, which I hope is me. And I will see you next time. Bye, y'all.